Is that right? Yes. State versus Jeremiah J. Patel. Arguing on behalf of the state is Sandra L. Tarver. Arguing on behalf of the defendant is Ellen J. Fran. And Ms. Tarver, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. You may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Assistant Attorney General Sandra Tarver. I represent the state of Wisconsin. This case is about the constitutionality of the warrantless probation search of Mr. Patel's computer. The state is asking this court to hold.
Just a moment, counsel. Okay, you may proceed.
The state is asking this court to hold that when there is a rule of probation that prohibits a probationer from possessing a computer, and the probationer violates that rule by possessing a computer, the computer and anything on it is contraband and is subject to a warrantless search by a probation officer.
Counsel, that's what you want the court to hold. That is not stated in your petition for review. There was a motion to strike that part of the brief. The rest of the brief does deal with the issues explicitly stated in the petition for review. Because the court didn't rule on the motion, the defendant did respond to that part of the brief, had to, because it was there and not struck yet. But for a few moments, I want you to explain why you think this court should deal with the issue. Then we will go ahead and listen to the issue without making a decision at this moment about the motion to strike.
I acknowledge that the constitutionality of the probation search was not raised in the state's petition for review.
Yes, indeed, the petition for review wanted this court to look at what is appropriate for an appellate court opinion. Should an appellate court go outside the briefs and outside the arguments and go on its own without giving the parties an opportunity to brief issues? Isn't that what you put out in your petition for review, which, of course, is a very interesting appellate matter, but it was not briefed, really, in your argument. I mean, you went right to the substance, not to the concept of what an appellate court should do. Is that correct?
Yes. So what are we to do with that? Page 9 of your petition for review takes the Court of Appeals to task for restructuring the case, reaching out and deciding matters that were never raised. It says, essentially, the Court of Appeals restructured this case to reach and decide matters that were never raised by the parties. That's the gravamen of your petition for review. Issue 1, reaching out. Issue 2, making fact-finding not supported. Reaching out. So why isn't the state essentially guilty of the very thing you had as the gravamen of your petition for review here today? It looks to me like the state has restructured what we are to address. I don't mean that in, I can say it like this way. Looks to me like the state's restructured. What do you think? I mean, I don't mean it to be accusatory. I mean it to be factual. Can you respond?
Well, I acknowledge that the constitutionality of the search was not raised in the state's petition. The state, nonetheless, is asking this court, in the exercise of its discretion, to review the issue. This court has jurisdiction to review the issue. And once this court has accepted a petition for review, it has discretion to review any substantial and compelling issue that the case presents.
For me, this is a bit of a bait and switch. That, and so there is a bigger issue, not just this case, but a bigger issue, whether or not we should condone what I perceive, anyway, as a bait and switch, and I guess what you've kind of acknowledged right now, saying the Constitution, we acknowledge the constitutionality of the probation issue was not raised. So do you think that's good for this court to do?
It is within this court's discretion to do so if it finds that the constitutional question presented is a substantial and compelling one.
And so you're saying it's a good thing for this, it's an okay thing for this court to do, or it's good, or I'm looking at a bigger policy issue than this particular facts of this case.
Where the court finds that the case presents a substantial and compelling issue that was not presented in the petition, the court may exercise its discretion to review it. And the state asks the court to do so here.
This is the final point I'll make. The only reason that your response brings a smile to my face is that it is quite incongruous. The very reason you're here is the court restructured, you think, the Court of Appeals restructured, and although it may have authority to do it, shouldn't be doing it. And now you're saying, but here, it's okay. I mean, it seems like a total about-face.
Counselor, I look perhaps at your argument a little bit differently than my two colleagues. I do appreciate the briefing on it, and I don't see how you could get us to overrule the Court of Appeals, who decided it on constitutional basis without our looking at constitutional questions. So although I understand what the petition for review said, I can't imagine this court would want to duck a significant constitutional issue that is presented by the Court of Appeals, whether it's in the petition for review or not.
So in an attempt to move this forward so that we can get to your argument on what you've briefed, I'd like to ask you a question about that. Do you think it's significant at all where Mr. Purtell was residing at the time of his possession of the computer? Wasn't he in a halfway house?
I understand from the record he was living in some type of a supervised residential setting.
Okay. And does that in any way impact on his freedom to possess or do whatever he'd like? I mean, it wasn't his home, although it was a place where he resided. I'm just curious if you think that that somehow would impact his the analysis.
There were two potential Fourth Amendment moments in this case. The first was the agent's entry into Mr. Purtell's apartment and seizure of his laptop and desktop computer. The constitutionality of that is not challenged by Mr. Purtell on appeal. As to the other issue, the constitutionality of the agent's inspection of the contents of that computer, up until now, the state has not posited any reason why his particular living circumstances should color the court's analysis of whether the agent could constitutionally look on the computer. To clarify something, the computer was removed from Mr. Purtell's residence and taken by the agent back to her office. And that is where she inspected the contents.
Right. Thank you.
Counsel, the Court of Appeals determined that what was in the computer, the images in the computer, were not contraband, and therefore that the agent had no business going, scrolling through, if you will, the contents of the computer. How do you respond to that?
The state's position is that where Mr. Purtell is prohibited from possessing a computer under the rules of his probation, he is, by that rule, prohibited from possessing material on a computer in his possession. Any material, regardless of its content and regardless of whether he otherwise was prohibited or not from possessing material of that nature. The state's position is that it is irrelevant whether there was an independent and distinct condition prohibiting the possession of images that depict animal cruelty. Under those circumstances, Mr. Fertel would have been prohibited from having posters on the walls of his apartment with animal images depicting cruelty, or magazines on the top of his desk, and such images on his computer. But here, he was prohibited from having a computer, and the state submits that that prohibition is what prohibits him from having images depicting animal cruelty or anything else on a computer in his possession. In short, the state submits that it is unreasonable. It is an unreasonable reading of the condition itself to read it as parsing out a difference between what it is for Mr. Patel to possess a computer and what it is for Mr. Patel to possess material on a computer that he's keeping.
Well, do you agree that there was no state law in effect at the time which would forbid a person from having images of animal cruelty?
Yes.
What about the federal law that's brought to our attention? 18 U.S.C. 48, does that in any way help you in regard to your argument, or does it hinder you?
I don't know the answer to that.
Do you think it has to be a violation of law to be a violation of probation, such that an agent could take a look at something in the probationer's possession?
No. If we're talking about, to begin with, the administrative code, the administrative code allows the agent to search the probationer's residence or property based on reasonable grounds to believe the residence or property contain contraband. And contraband is defined as including any item the probationer may not possess under the rules and conditions of his probation. So if he isn't permitted to have material on a computer in his possession, and he has the computer in his possession, then the material on that computer that the agent may have reason to believe is there is contraband.
So in other words, as I understand your argument, the whether or not there may be a federal violation implicated or a state violation of law implicated is almost irrelevant. As if the limitation or condition of probation is he cannot have a computer, then any information, an email from his mother, would be contraband under your argument. Is that correct?
Yes. That is the state's position.
Well, maybe we could carve out an exception for emails from mother, but other than that,
I understand it. Okay.
May I ask a question? On page 3 of your brief, it says, under the rules of Pertel's probation, he could not purchase, possess, nor use a computer, software, hardware, nor a modem without prior agent approval. That is the actual wording of the conditions of probation?
Yes. Let me clarify. Mr. Pertel's motion to suppress alleges at page 2 that one of the rules of his probation was, as I quoted in my brief, that he not purchase, possess, nor use a computer, software, hardware, nor a modem without prior agent approval. There was also testimony at the suppression hearing and a finding by the trial court that he was given a specific rule of probation that he not possess or use computers.
Is that a normal condition of probation?
Let me say this. I can't say, as a matter of practice, how frequently that type of condition is written. I can say that my legal research has not uncovered a lot of case law involving that type of a situation where there's a computer, the possession of the computer was a violation of probation. So I haven't seen a lot of evidence of that in the cases that I have researched.
I mean, is there anything in the record that would provide a linkage between this condition of probation and the offenses for which Mr. Pertell was convicted?
There was testimony at the suppression hearing along the lines of why there had been a concern about his possession of computers. I believe the evidence was that he had, in the underlying animal mistreatment case, contacted the victim being the owner of the animal or animals, and he had done so over the computer. So there was certainly a concern that he not have ready access to a computer for that purpose. Now, I think as soon as the agent found out the kinds of things that he was posting on a MySpace page, that probably gave her additional reasons for the condition against possessing a computer.
Are we called upon to decide whether this is a reasonable condition of his probation?
No, that issue has not been raised.
I see that as an issue here, but
no.
If it is, I need to.
To my my understanding is that there's never been a challenge to the breadth or to the reasonableness of the condition itself. And as long as we're on the record, if I may, I would like to take just a minute to clarify one thing about what the state is relying on in the record and what it is not relying on in the record as support for the rule that Mr. Pertell not possess a computer. There was testimony at the hearing and a judgment of conviction introduced as an exhibit from the underlying animal mistreatment case. And there was testimony and reference to the judgment in the findings of the court as if that judgment were in effect at the time of the search. And it appears to me the judgment on its face was not in effect at the time of the search. And so I want to call to the court's
attention. Was or was not?
Was not in effect at the time of the search. It was entered subsequently, it appears to me, from the face. And I want to call to the court's attention that the state has not relied on the judgment as the source of the rule prohibiting the possession of a computer, but is relying on the rules that the probation agent imposed and that she reviewed with Mr. Pertell at the intake meeting on Friday, April 6th, and that they discussed and so forth, all of which were in place on the date of the search, which was the subsequent Monday, April 9. So there is no question but that at the time of the search, he was under a rule that prohibited his possession of a computer and that he was in violation of the rule.
And these rules were made before the judgment of conviction was entered?
I can say this. This is in the record. He was placed on probation for animal mistreatment in March of 2007. But to the best of my ability to tell, there is no judgment of conviction in the record in this case entered in March of 2007. Then he met with his probation agent, Christine Anderson, at an intake meeting on April 6th, and that is when rules and conditions were reviewed with him that expressly prohibited the possession and use.
When was the conviction entered?
Pardon?
When was the conviction entered, the judgment?
I can't recall if this is in the record or if I'm going outside the record, but the judgment of conviction
public
was...
Public record.
He pled in November of 2006. He was convicted, but he was sentenced to probation and a judgment entered in March of 2007.
The court does in-court processing. Why would the judgment of conviction be delayed like that?
I'm not sure. I may be mistaken.
It should be right on the public list of events in CCAP. Did you look at that?
I did look outside the record. I did pull up the file from the animal mistreatment case, and I did find what I thought to be the original judgment of conviction.
Was one of the conditions of probation that he not be able to possess or use a computer?
It was part of the rules imposed by his probation agent not later than April 6th.
But it wasn't part of the rules for probation set forth by the judge?
That's where there's some confusion in the record, because an exhibit was introduced, a judgment of conviction referring to a prohibition on computers. But I submit it's not clear on the face of that judgment that that was the judgment in effect on the date of the search.
Doesn't a judgment, usually, if it's going to do probation, usually say and other conditions imposed by the department? So the judgment may or may not have said that about the computer, but usually the judgment says and other, and they have to be reasonably related to the problems that we're talking about, right?
Right.
All right. And so it's set not, at least it's set by the agent. Thank you. And it's my understanding that it is the state's position, it's an absolute position, that if there is a condition of probation or a rule by the probation agent that says thou shalt not have or use a computer, I may say, except, and this, the exception doesn't apply here, right?
Right.
If you can't have or use a computer, then the state is within its authority under the probation laws, under Griffin, and under the administrative code of this state, to not only seize the computer, but to examine everything on the computer. Hard drive, soft program, et cetera, right? Is that your position?
Yes.
Are you aware of a decision by this court within the last couple of years called State versus Carroll?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you think that that would give you some difficulty in this case? There we said it was okay for the police officer to look at an image on a cell phone that was in plain view, but it was not all right for the police officer to scroll through the images on the phone. Now, isn't that very similar to what we're talking about here?
No.
Tell me why not.
Mr. Patel relies on State v. Carroll, but
I can understand why.
But the state submits that the case does not apply here. The reasons are that Mr. Carroll was not a probationer, and the property searched was not contraband. And those two things together significantly distinguish Carroll from this case. As persons not on probation, the defendant in Carroll and the defendants in the other cases cited by Mr. Patel enjoyed an expectation of privacy in their property that persons on probation do not. As this court stated in State v. Griffin, the expectations of privacy of a person on probation cannot be the same as the expectations of privacy of persons not on probation. It is only the reasonable expectations of privacy which the Fourth Amendment protects. Mr. Pertel has not shown or attempted to show that a probationer has a reasonable expectation of privacy in property he is prohibited from possessing under the conditions of his probation.
Now, as I understand Griffith, and as I understand the administrative code, they tie up any search in a residence, and in any container, to the condition of probation and the underlying problem or issue. So it's your position that just because it says thou shalt not use a computer, that's enough of a tie-in to search the computer.
I see my red light is on,
may I answer?
It is the state's position that the court should adopt a blanket rule. If the probation rules prohibit the possession of a computer, then he is prohibited from having anything on it.
You know, did he use a computer in the underlying crime?
The record reflects that he did to contact the victim being the owner of the animal or animals.
I know, but before he did the mutilation in for which he was convicted. Isn't that right?
To the extent that question is answered in the record, I believe it is only answered in that the concern was when he was convicted of animal mistreatment and placed on probation, the concern was that he had used the computer to contact.
Maybe he'd contact another victim.
And maybe he would contact others,
all right.
Yes.
Good. But that he didn't. All right. That's fine. Thank you. That's the tie-in. And in light of what the state petitioned, then the defense doesn't attack the rule as being not adequate or not sufficient or that it's not a good rule for him when you look at what the crime was. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Okay.
Are we talking about like a Rowan issue from...
I'm talking about an issue that would say, hey, the probation officer had no right to impose this condition because it doesn't fit the crime or and the state doesn't do that because they would not have dealt with that under your petition for review. Okay, thank you. We have Assistant Public Defender Ellen Cron. Ms. Cron?
May it please the Court, my name is Ellen Cron, and I represent the defendant appellant, Jeremiah Pertel. It is well established that all citizens, even probationers like Mr. Pertel, are protected by the Fourth Amendment. And in Griffin, although this Court established a reduced standard for probation searches, it was still careful to note that probationers have privacy rights that must be respected. It did not create a right for probation agents to conduct unreasonable or arbitrary searches. It's equally well established that when courts engage in Fourth Amendment analysis of electronic devices, that courts have to distinguish between the physical object that makes up the electronic device and the data that the device contains. And that comes from container cases where there's a separate justification required to open something like a suitcase or office files. In this case, the focus of the Fourth Amendment analysis is on the data that's stored in Mr. Pertel's computer. And the essence of the state's argument is that the container analysis should not apply in this case. It should. Just because there's a reduced level of evidence needed to justify a probation search does not mean that courts are excused from engaging in the correct Fourth Amendment analysis.
You agree that the state could seize the computer?
Yes.
But if it wants to look at anything, any of the data?
Yes, that's a separate search of the data that needs to be justified by reasonable grounds.
Like Carroll?
Yes.
Why? When the probationer has used the computer to find victims, is a rule that's imposed, don't use the computer except at work or in the library. Why he's violating the rule, why can't you look inside the computer?
She doesn't have any reasonable grounds to believe that he is violating a rule. And when Mr. Patel and the agent meet to go over his rules on April 6th, she in fact looks at his MySpace page with him, and she looks at it again before she goes to get the computers out of his apartment and confirms that in fact he has not been contacting the person that they were initially concerned about. So there's no reasonable grounds to believe that she would find something like that if she looked at the data on his computer.
So the rule is just you can't have a computer. He violated that. She takes the computer. There's no reasonable grounds that there's something inside the computer in the data that violates a rule.
Yes.
That is contraband.
That's correct.
Okay.
I was very interested in the restriction that said he couldn't use a computer, not just have, mm-hmm. but he couldn't use. And as I look at field supervision, which is DOC 328.04, and the section that I look at most particularly is 2K, which I think gives the agent the ability to monitor the probationer to ensure appropriate control of him and protection of the public. And I have interpreted the state's argument as saying he can't use a computer. He's got one. He's obviously using it because he's got a MySpace page. So in order to adequately supervise him, she has authority under the rules that are set out in the chapter and section I referenced to look and see what he's doing. And when she looked to see what he was doing, she found things that were disturbing to her. Is there any reason why you don't think that section applies to the agent's activities here?
I think that her ability to monitor him is not the same as the ability to search him and to search his computer. And so I think she can monitor him by doing things like having him coming into the office, having him voluntarily give his password for the MySpace page, and in fact, she then sees that he is not contacting the person that they're concerned about.
But I don't think the use of the computer was limited to simply contacting the person they were concerned about. In fact, it says he could use a computer only for, what, work and school?
That's
correct.
I think
that was pretty much it. So, you know, there was a limitation on what he could do, and I guess my concern is, how can the agent supervise what he's doing with the computer if she can't look at it? I mean, you're agreeing she can seize it. What we're stuck with is the search part, not the seizure part of this activity.
Well, I think her ability to seize the computer does, in fact, give her the ability to stop any conduct that she's concerned about. If she is concerned that he's using that computer to contact someone, the seizure takes that computer away from him and ends any concern about that. I think it's also important to clarify that we've mentioned several different iterations of the rule. The rule that was testified to by the agent and the rule that the circuit court found on page 30 of record item 34 is that he was not to possess or own a computer. And then there is the exception for using it for school purposes, which is not applicable here.
Are you saying that you don't think there was a restriction on his use of the computer?
Not as that rule was testified to. It's just the possession or ownership of the computer.
But he wouldn't possess or, well, maybe he would possess or own a computer he used for work or in school. Okay, well, it was my understanding that there was a restriction also on his use of the computer. And if you're saying that's not part of the condition, that's something that we can look at.
It isn't.
Thank you.
Isn't that inquiry
fundamental to the analysis here? I mean, don't we know what we are dealing with in terms of what the rule is before we can analyze the argument of the state? In other words, the state gets to its argument referring to DOC 328.21, sub 3, saying the agent can do a search of the living quarters if there are reasonable grounds to believe they're contraband, and then looks to DOC 328.16 to define contraband. And recall, this is a pretty expansive definition to include anything, including a mother's email, that would be on anything that's on the computer. But you're saying that, it seems to me unclear what the condition of probation is. The definition of contraband relied upon is DOC 328.16 sub A. Any condition which the client may not possess under the rules or conditions of the client's supervision.
I don't think it is unclear what the rule is. I think that the probation agent specifically testified that the rule was that he was not to possess or own a computer. And the circuit court specifically found that the rule was that he was not to possess or own a computer. And that's consistent with the judgment of conviction. I think that rule is relevant to whether or not he possessed contraband, but the rule doesn't prohibit him from any items that he would have had on that computer. And so she can't search the computer with reasonable grounds to believe.
Was the contraband the computer here?
The contraband is the physical object that is the computer, not any documents, data, pictures, or other data that would be on the computer.
So where is the expectation of privacy in the matter of contraband itself? You referenced earlier on the Carroll Doctrine. Unlike the Carroll Doctrine, this does not involve a case of a physical container such as a piece of luggage or a trunk or a suitcase or a file cabinet, which could, in fact, hold any number of items, either contraband or non-contraband. Here, the item that was searched was the contraband itself. So I don't see how it is you're separating. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to separate the physical item of the computer as contraband, but the contents, the data, as you say, as non-contraband. And I guess I'm having a tough time seeing how you logically separate those two things when the item searched was not a container that might contain or hold contraband, but the item searched was the contraband itself.
Yes, there are a couple of points I want to address in that question. One is that the computer is a container. The computers and electronic devices
And in this case, it was the contraband itself. I believe you just acknowledged that to the Chief Justice.
That's correct.
All right.
And is your question getting at whether he has a reasonable expectation of privacy?
I'm wondering how you think the two can be separated in terms of any expectation of privacy in contraband.
I think they can be separated. I would note that this issue of whether he had a reasonable expectation of privacy was only first raised in the reply brief in this court. So Mr. Patel has necessarily said that he has a reasonable expectation of privacy, and no one has argued against that until we've been in this court. So in one sense, that argument is waived. But he does have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
How so?
And I want to highlight a
few.
Where
does it come from?
It comes from the fact that people believe that when they put information, which can be a vast amount of personal information from banking records to pharmaceutical records, medical records, and
the most personal items that a person can commit to writing.
Exactly. And in this case, I haven't highlighted the facts that focus on that, since that is not the issue that's been briefed, but I'd like to highlight them now.
Counsel, before you do, I just need to clarify something so I know what we're talking about based upon a number of questions and your answers. I was looking at the motion to suppress filed by the defendant in this case in circuit court, and in that motion, the defendant says that the Department of Corrections issued a rule that he, quote, not purchase, possess, nor use a computer, software, hardware, nor a modem without prior agent approval, end of quote, and that he, quote, be prohibited from maintaining a MySpace.com account. Use is included within the defendant's own words in the defendant's motion concerning the rule. Are you now disputing that?
I'm saying that's in the record, but what was testified to and what hasn't been controverted is the rule that the agent testified to and that the judge found, which was that he was not to own or possess a computer. I think what's in the evidence and not simply what's in the allegations is what we have to rely on.
Are you disputing what counsel wrote in the motion papers as the direct quotes from the rule about the MySpace account and the use?
We don't have the rules, so that hasn't been compared and contrasted. It hasn't been subject to cross-examination. I'm not disputing it, but I think that we have to rely on what's in evidence and what came in at the suppression hearing, what the agent testified to, and what the circuit court found. Back to the question of whether he had a reasonable expectation of privacy, it's important to note that he was placed on probation in this case in March 28th of 2000.
The second part of that inquiry is that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable.
Yes. And he was placed on probation in this case in March 28th of 2007. He then met with his agent on April 6th of 2007, just a bit more than a week later. His probation was transferred from Dane to Washington County. And at that meeting, the agent testified that there had been some ambiguity about whether he could continue to use a computer in Dane County. And then she asked him to go and shut down his MySpace page. So she's necessarily asking him to use his computer by shutting down the MySpace page. Nonetheless, we do concede that the computer, by the time that it was seized, would have been contraband. But if you look at day two of the jury trial, specifically on page 76, when the forensic analyst testifies and talks about the data that she's found in the computer, what you can see is that data was in the computer before he was ever placed on probation. So even if this court finds that it's unreasonable to recognize a privacy interest of someone putting data in a computer after they know it's contraband, I think certainly society would recognize that we put data into our private computers that are not on shared networks and expect that that private information that not many years ago would have been stored in a safety deposit box.
And when you say we, counsel, I assume you mean by the use of that plural pronoun, we who are not under rules of probation proscribing our possession of a computer.
Mm-hmm. And that rule would have gone into effect after most of the data is already on that computer.
So what?
So he can access it. I mean, when you use a computer, you're not always putting things on a computer. Sometimes you're going back and looking at files that you've saved. So I'm not really sure of the import in regard to the arguments that are being made that the data was put on the computer
right
before he started on probation. I'm not getting the connection there.
There's no indication that she's just searching through the data that he has accessed in the week he's been on probation. She has access to that entire computer, including items that have been deleted.
I understand that, but so does he. And so if he's using the computer, he can use it to look at things that are already there. It's not necessary that he's putting new things on the computer.
And then her seizing that computer solves that problem. He can no longer access the data that's
on that
computer.
All right. Thank you. I get the argument.
Counsel, let me follow through on something that was asked by some of my other colleagues that sort of gets to something that troubles me. We talked before about the Administrative Code Section 328.16, which defines contraband. And one of the things that contraband means, and this is B, 1B, any item whose possession is forbidden by law. Now, it's my understanding that at the time that this was occurring, the search was occurring by the agent, that there was a federal law in place, 18 U.S.C. 48, which forbid the depiction of animal cruelty. Isn't that contraband?
Like the state, I am also unfamiliar with that law. I believe that the Court of Appeals cited a case where they said that the depiction of animal cruelty wasn't inherently illegal, and so
under
that
state law.
Okay.
But this is under the federal law. Doesn't that make a difference?
I think that the rule defining contraband simply says law, so perhaps that would be applicable. That certainly hasn't been something that's been argued at any point.
That isn't something that was covered by either of you in the briefs.
No.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
This is part of the Court of Appeals taking on another issue. Is that right?
I think it's part of that, and it's also part of, if we are going to get into the issues of the expectation of privacy and this other state law that hasn't been briefed, I think that gets back to the issue that was raised during the state's argument of whether this court should consider striking the brief. And if the decision is going to come down to reasonable expectation of privacy, an issue that hasn't been raised until the reply brief, I think that points to granting the motion to strike, because if the state is saying that this is a substantial and compelling issue, but it's going to be decided on an issue that hasn't been briefed, that's concerning.
Now, the definition of contraband is forbidden by law. Does law there mean the rule of the probation agent?
I believe it says prohibited by law or rules of supervision.
Okay.
So rules.
That's
would
where
be
I got that this was contraband, mm-hmm. but wanted to check that I was dealing with the right thing.
I want to explore your position on what you think Mr. Pertell could do under the probation conditions. He talked with the agent. He acknowledged that he had some computers. And as I understand it, he said, I'm going to turn those over to my father. Okay. Could he have used the computers if the computers were in the possession of his father?
I think that might depend on whether or not you think that if he is sitting at the computer, even if the computer is at dad's house, if that is still him being in control of the computer enough that you would say that he is possessing the computer at that time. I think there is the exception for work and school. So if he was using it for those purposes at that time, perhaps. I think it comes down to what the definition of possess is and how it would apply in that case.
Well, is it legitimate for the probation agent to want to know whether the computer physically in the possession of the father was being used or not?
Well, she certainly said that she was happy to just give it to the dad, and she wasn't interested in looking at it until it was in her office. The question is just simply she's wondering if it's being used,
yeah,
if dad has it. I don't know how she would be able to monitor that except by continuing to access his MySpace page if she's wondering that somehow, if he's somehow using his MySpace page from dad's computer.
I thought he was not prohibited from use. He was prohibited from own or possess.
That's correct.
So we've got a problem.
Even if she is considering whether or not he's using it, that doesn't give her the right to search it because that's not an item he's prohibited. Checking on his use doesn't meet the definition of contraband if use isn't prohibited.
Let me ask this. Let's say the probation agent went to the place where Mr. Pertell was living, and she saw on the walls three posters that depict animal cruelty. Could she have seized those posters?
No, because there was no rule prohibiting him from having images of animal cruelty. Okay. And so it wouldn't meet the definition of contraband, and it's contraband that she's allowed to seize.
All right. So the idea of contraband as opposed to the idea of facilitating the rehabilitation of the probationer are two different things, and you can't facilitate the rehabilitation of the probationer?
Certainly facilitating rehabilitation is a goal of probation, but it's not the standard for a search. The standard for a probation search is that the agent has to have reasonable grounds to believe that she's going to find contraband. And so, no, I don't think that she can justify a search based on believing it might be helpful to her to somehow know that.
Couldn't have gotten a warrant for that even?
Could she have gotten a warrant for the images?
For the posters.
I suppose since she had already seen them, she would have probable cause to believe they existed. I don't know how she would justify that they were somehow something that he couldn't have or couldn't possess.
So
because there's no rule prohibiting that.
All kinds of images of animal cruelty can exist with the probationer, but as long as they're not on the computer, even if they're on the computer.
On the computer or off the computer, they are not contraband. I think
unless they violated a federal law.
Yes.
Okay. And the probation agent can't do anything about that?
He could add a rule saying he's prohibited from possessing images of animal cruelty. That would then make them contraband, and then she could seize them.
Is your answer to the state that in the future all conditions of probation should say you can't have a computer and we get to look at everything in the computer to make sure that you're not abusing it?
I think that would be one way that the state could respond to that. I think that condition could possibly be subject to a challenge, but that specific rule of supervision isn't reasonably related enough to the person's supervision that it could be subject to a separate challenge, but that would solve the problem of the agent not being able to go into the computer to search the data, which is separate from the container.
Well, you say it could be challenged as not reasonably related, mm-hmm. but that's what, and it's a separate challenge, could be separately subject to a separate challenge, but what I understand the state to be arguing is that very thing here. That to possess includes anything that's on it, and that means anything and everything that's on it. Yeah, I mean, so.
Yes, I suppose in that way they are similar, because if the court adopted the state's reasoning, they are necessarily saying that the judge imposed a condition that was not to own or possess computers and also not own or possess any data, because if the court adopts that reasoning, then the agent can go through all of it. And I think that does bring us back to the facts of this case, which is that when Mr. Pertell was placed on probation, the concern was about his use of MySpace to contact people. So the concern was about his conduct, not about the content of the computer. And that's one of the reasons that this rule wasn't put into place. Adopting the state's argument would essentially put that rule into place, and that doesn't seem to be reasonably related to why he was placed on
probation. Counsel, I don't know if that's completely accurate. When you go back and look at the underlying actions by the defendant which resulted in the conviction for animal cruelty, wasn't the agent concerned based on those actions with the mental health of this particular defendant? Wasn't she concerned that he might be mentally ill given what he had done?
She did say that she had concerns about his mental health treatment, although when she testified about that at the suppression hearing, she said, I thought maybe it would give me some information about his mental health, but of course he was already going to mental health treatment. So it doesn't seem that that can be the reason for looking into the data in his computer, in addition to the fact that concern about mental health may be a valid concern for her to have, but it's not reasonable grounds to believe that there's contraband on the computer.
Well, doesn't that tie to the section that Justice Rogensack asked you about earlier, that she has the right to monitor his situation, and one of the ways to monitor the situation is to go into the computer and see what he's looking at, what he's been looking at?
I do think that because of the hugely vast amount of personal and private information that might be contained on a computer, that of course it's going to give the agent some information and insight into him if she can look at the computer. But some information or some insight about how to supervise him is not the standard. The standard is whether there are reasonable grounds to believe that the item to be searched contains contraband. And contraband has to be something he's prohibited from possessing, something that gives insight into his mental health state, like maybe an email to mom, as was said before, saying, I'm feeling upset, I'm having difficulty handling things, is not an item that he's prohibited from possessing.
Well, that leads me to say, well, the state has the computer. It wants to see what's on that computer. Concern that he may be contacting other potential victims. Concerned that there may be some images that further his problem of cruelty to animals. Maybe that there's insight into rehabilitation or mental health. And you say can't do that under the administrative code or the Fourth Amendment now. So can they get a search warrant? And what do they put in the search warrant?
I think that the probation officer could seek a search warrant. She would have to have some reasonable grounds to believe that she's going to find something that is evidence of violation of a crime on there. And insight into mental health or insight into supervisory needs is not that type of evidence.
Well, didn't law enforcement actually get a search warrant here?
I see my red light is on. May I respond?
Yes, you may.
Yes, they did get a search warrant, but they didn't get a search warrant until after the agent clicked through files, found pictures that she was concerned were images of child pornography, and then called the agent in to view those images. So that's what the search warrant was based on, not on simply a concern for his mental health.
You're not attacking whether or not it was appropriate for law enforcement to get that search warrant.
No, although it would be the fruits of this probation search.
That would be your
challenging
argument, right?
A hindsight warrant. Do it first, then get a warrant. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel? I'm sorry. Did you have a question? Yes, Tarver, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Justice Ziegler, the trial court found
that Mr. Purtell was given a specific rule of probation that he not, quote, possess or use computers.
Pardon me?
The trial court found Mr. Purtell was given under the rules of his probation a rule that he not, quote, possess or use computers. And that is...
I'm getting the transcript, so I'll look
okay.
myself.
What's
the page number? Then?
This is transcript at record number 34. I have page numbers 30, 31.
So, no. But your position that you gave us didn't say that you can't use a computer. Your position was if you can't have a computer, then the state can look at the computer. So the use point is irrelevant in your position.
Yes.
Is that right?
The state has not relied on the use prohibition. The state has relied on the possession prohibition. And
a blanket absolute rule.
I do wish to call to the court's attention that you know the regulation that was in effect at the time of the search. The state has cited it over and over. I do want to call to the court's attention, however, that that regulation was revised effective July 1st, 2013, insofar
as... Which regulation are you talking about? What's the...
DOC Section 328.22.
Mm-hmm.
That is the new number effective July 1, 2013. And that rule expands, if you will, on what the regulation said at the time of the search. That rule says a search of an offender, the offender's living quarters or property, may be made when an employee, here a probation agent, has reasonable grounds to believe the offender possesses contraband or evidence of a rule violation on or within his or her person or property. Now, that certainly would make relevant whether the agent had reason to think she would find evidence he had been using the computer contrary to a condition that he not use it.
How can we use a code that is how many months after this search?
I only call this change to your attention
okay.
So that the court is aware that this change occurred since the search in this case, and the state is only relying, obviously, on the regulation in effect at the time of the search.
Well, does the fact that it's changing it mean that that wasn't in existence previously, that there was a different rule?
I as I say, the state is relying solely on possession.
Okay. Solely on possession, okay.
The state is asking that this court reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and that this court reinstate Mr. Purtell's judgment of conviction. If this court addresses expectation of privacy, the state requests that this court hold that whereas here Mr. Purtell was prohibited from possessing a computer, he did not have an expectation of privacy in the content of his computer that society is prepared to recognize as reasonable. The state requests that in any event this court hold the search of Mr. Purtell's computer complied with the Administrative Code and the Fourth Amendment because the material on Mr. Purtell's computer was, like the computer itself, contraband. Unless there are any further questions, that would conclude the state's argument.
One of the responses of your opposing counsel is the reasonable expectation of privacy wasn't raised until the reply brief. What should the court do, if anything, about that?
The state did not raise expectation of privacy as I see it. What happened is Mr. Purtell has made an argument in this case, and the argument is that the search of his residence for computers and the search of his computer for animal images or whatever the case may be are separate and distinct searches for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment that have equal footing, if you will, under the Fourth Amendment. And Mr. Purtell cites State versus Carroll and a number of other cases in support of that proposition. Now, it seems to me that with Mr. Purtell having made that argument, this court can look at that argument and take issue with it. And one of the grounds on which this court could take issue with that argument is that those cases don't apply because the defendants in those cases were not probationers and the property searched in those cases was not contraband.
Maybe I'm coming back full circle. So this reasonable expectation of privacy is not something you've raised. It's not something that the defense has specifically raised, but you're saying that we can get into it anyway and do our own arguments and research other than what's in your reply brief. Yeah?
I think that it is one of the things that distinguishes Carroll and the other cases relied on by Mr. Pertell for an argument that is central to Mr. Pertell's position on the constitutionality of the search.
Because if he can't establish there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, that's the heart of his constitutional argument that he may not talk about, but he doesn't have the right without that foundation, correct?
Correct.
Briefed? I mean, I didn't think it was briefed.
It has not been briefed.
But you can't, if you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, you get it if you have a subjective expectation of privacy, and it's one that society is prepared to accept as reasonable. Without those two underpinnings, you can't go anywhere. So it doesn't really matter if you say it overtly or silently. If you don't have both of them, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. Or am I wrong on that?
That's correct.
Have you briefed that? That whole issue has not been briefed. If you raise a constitutional issue, you raise what supports affirmance on that issue. I don't know how... Maybe it's just me, but I don't see why it's not there. I understand Mr. Pertell's argument that we shouldn't even be into this because this was not in the petition for review, which to me is quite separate from what we're talking about here. Okay. Any other questions?
There are no further questions. I'll sit down.
Of course. Thank you, counsel. Once again, we have a Fourth Amendment case. I'm going to do a body count on these Fourth Amendment. I think we have at least one every oral argument in the month, but I'll check it out. In a different function. I can't remember another one since Griffith on the probation, but I could be wrong on that. That ends, and I want to thank you both for the arguments and for the briefs. And the surprise about the issue. That ends the argument in 12 AP 1307 CR State versus Jeremiah J. Pertell. The court will take just a couple of minutes in recess and then go on to our next case.
the impression the microphones are on. Is that true?